All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool and
a former guest,
RC.
Yes, RC has been on our show before. I think that was, what, about 6 months ago? We talked about show investing and all that stuff, why people
are like 18 months, John.
Yeah, I think it was 2 years ago.
It's been a while. It's last time I, well, not last time I was in Seattle. It was actually the time before that because we were in your little apartment over the garage. So that was like when I was doing the GoRuck, when we did the GoRuck event.
It was 2018.
Yeah, August of 2018.
When you say two, it's hard to believe we've had a show for 2 years.
I know.
But yes, we have RC Peck, who's coming on to join us again today. We're going to be talking about, people out there may have heard of a few rumblings this week in Wall Street. And, you know, we're going to be talking about getting the power back to the people, right? You know, GameStop.
We actually don't know where this episode is going to go. Let's be honest.
Sticking it to the man. I like that. Sticking it to the man.
Yeah. Is it micro persuasion? Like all these little people starting to affect, you know, big moves? Is it like, I don't know. Like we're going to figure it. That's what we're going to figure out today. Like what's going on? And RC, how would you describe yourself these days? Because, you know, that changes from time to time.
It's pretty hard. I maybe have a foot in finance and investing and the other foot in, I don't know, NLP, family systems, really understanding how the brain works around money. I mean, I'm a practitioner in understanding how adult humans grow and protect their money. And that's what I've been doing for two decades.
Yeah. And there's, you know, we've talked, you know, lots of times about like just the amount of self-persuasion and outside persuasion there is, especially around money and how intense that is. And that's, you know, how many things you can learn about yourself and the world when you put it in the, I don't know, the pot of money, and it kind of turns up the heat on everything, right? It's like people are very emotional around money. So it just, I think it intensifies a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, money is a vehicle like alcohol in college, right? It's going to just make whatever deficiencies or pain you have that you're not aware of. And it's just going to 10X it, right? So, yeah.
10x, baby.
10x.
10x that.
Grand Cardone, man.
Speaking of alcohol, like let's cover our beverages. So that's what we're going to talk about. We don't know where it's going to go.
So let me give the title, because I gotta get the title in GameStop Micro Persuasion, how the little guys are taking back control. Yeah. And so now that I got my little clickbait out there,
that's our SEO click. Bait version of the title, right? We'll jump into the beverages. We're gonna let our guest RC go first in his cute little hold up that mug again.
Yeah, hey, I mean,
that is a cute mug. Like is that a wolf in a cardigan sweater with reading glasses? Is that the whole?
Well, you know this, but that's my nickname, Wolf.
Yeah,
the Wolf. So
that's not what I had in mind when I. I didn't think wolf and cardigan with reading glasses. That's not what came to mind for me.
It's all part of the image. It's all part of the image.
Okay. All right.
Not like the wolf on Wall Street. That's a totally different wolf.
Different wolf. Yeah. This is a different wolf. So what are you having? What beverage are you having, RC? Ayahuasca.
I'm having my second coffee of the day. I only allow myself two coffees. And this one is coming particularly late in the day.
I'll say it's pretty, even though you're West Coast, it's still pretty late for you.
It's pretty late for me. And I didn't start drinking coffee until about 7 years ago. And, you know, I realized about noon today that I had not had my second cup, and I got all excited that the second one was coming early afternoon. And I will not be drinking beer because my little 9-year-old girl got diagnosed with celiac disease, so she can't eat any gluten. And so in solidarity, I gave up gluten for the rest of my life 2 months ago.
Oh, wow.
And you might not know this, Jonathan, but my alcohol is gluten. It is donuts and zingers and Twinkies and Ho-Hos and ding-dongs and Pop-Tarts and cookies.
Yeah. You know, I would just have to be like, you know, child, some things you have to learn on your own.
You're on your own on this one.
I gotta reassure you though, because I went down this gluten-free thing for about 10 years. Cause my wife, she's still gluten-free. My kids were gluten-free for a while. They're kind of over it now because there were some gluten-related things that the doctor recommended they get off gluten for a while. And we did that for about 10 years with them. So like yourself, I kind of went on that, you know, I went on that journey with them. And it's really not bad because there's a lot of,
I mean,
a lot of gluten-free options out there today. So,
but except for beer, there is no good.
Except for beer. Yeah.
I did buy one and it was so bad. I was like, all right.
Sorghum beer is horrible.
Would mead be gluten-free?
Mead?
Not really beer. Yeah. I mean, mead is more close to wine, I guess. Because it's made from honey, so it probably wouldn't have gluten in it.
I mean, the thing is, I don't really drink that much.
Yeah.
As it is, so honestly, the donuts and the Pop-Tarts and the Zingers, which my kids call gas station food, that was my way to check out.
Yeah.
Like if there was a tough day, I'm like, I'm gonna go get a box of cherry Pop-Tarts.
Yeah. Zingers are the best.
Though. Oh my God, I love Zingers. So I'm having to figure out the new go-to.
Yeah, that's a tough, tough thing because you can't find those. You pull into a Pilot or a, you know, any convenience store. You're limited. You have to go to these specialty stores to get those gluten-free Zingers.
Yeah,
which don't taste the same. I mean, come on. All right, so you're drinking coffee, French press, I assume.
No, instant.
Instant.
I have moved on. It was taking too much time, and. It's
such a hassle.
It is
grinding it's filtering it. It's like, nope, teaspoon in, done, drink, move on.
You're like my grandfather now.
I've aged.
Give me the Folgers
it's not Folgers, but
it's Trader Joe's. All right, it's probably Trader Joe's instant. So
they don't have, do they have instant? I don't even know.
I don't know, but if they did, it would be much cooler. So, or Whole Foods instant.
It is a German instant coffee,
of course. Yes. Okay.
Of course.
All right. So I'm drinking.
French press is a lot of work. I mean, that's,
that's the beauty of it. Like, I tell you, RC, like, since I came to your house last year, it was actually this time last year that I was out there right before all this COVID crap hit. It already hit Seattle when I was out there last, but they just hadn't locked anything down yet. Yeah. And we were using the French press there. And when I came back, I was like, I'm doing that more. Got rid of the automatic coffee maker. Because it's so noisy, and every morning since I've had French press, because it's like my meditation time.
It is good,
you know, and it does taste better. So, so I'm drinking leftover beer today. Not like leftover beer left like in a glass, but leftover in the fridge.
This half glass sitting out for a week.
Yeah. So I've got the River Horse.
Oh yeah.
Chocolate porter.
Oh, that's a good leftover.
Yeah, and this is like, I don't know what I rated last time, but today it's like a 4.5. So it's really good.
I think you were like a 2.5 last time. So you're really inconsistent there, Sean.
Well, I had two beers on the last episode, so this is third. So what are you having, Jonathan? You said you had a good one.
I have got a good one, and I love the title of this. This is called, let me hold it up. This is called
People Power. But I love how you picked it for the episode. That is awesome.
That font is very Coca-Cola font at the top.
Oh yeah, the top definitely.
That's it is. I just noticed that.
That's crazy. Shake it a little bit before you open it.
This camera really bothers me. I know, it is a little Coca-Cola. They might
StreamYard's camera is definitely backwards. Like it is so like disorienting to hold something up to the camera on StreamYard. Other than that, it's a great platform.
Absolutely. So when I first picked this out, I said, when I first saw this title, this label, I thought, power to the people, man, back to the people. So I thought about our episode, and sure enough, that's the very reason I picked this out. But I will say a couple of things that added to this selection is that this is an Imperial Double New England Porter.
That's crazy. That's a weird name.
Yeah.
Double New England. So.
Whoa. Okay. Wait a minute. Nope. Nope, nope.
It's a New England double port. No, wait.
No, triple.
Wait.
Triple. No.
Oh, man. I think I've totally.
No,
I think
Mid-Atlantic. I've totally botched it. It's Mid-Atlantic.
Dude, I really screwed this one up.
Completely off.
This is an IPA. This is an Imperial IPA.
That's not even the same universe.
You're an embarrassment.
It's literally other hemisphere.
This is so sad. Look at that.
Oh man,
I'm embarrassed right now.
Well, let me explain. Real
you made
quick.
Me beg RC to be on the show today, and then this is how you show up, Jonathan. Like it's embarrassing for me and my friend.
Do you know this show is happening?
There's no label. Only there's one label on this that says Southern Grist, and then People Power.
For the record, there's only one label on every beer, and like, that's how it works.
Seriously, this is a four pack. It was sitting with all of the other porters and stouts, so I just assumed this was either a stout or a porter. And so
now you're cursed with the IPA.
This better be. So this is all right. Let me give you the spiel on this. This is 8% ABV.
Okay.
Or a IPA. That's not bad.
97% IP. 97 IBUs.
It doesn't even say how many IBU. I can't find
the IBUs. It's off the charts.
I'm pretty good with moving on now. It sounds like a beer that you bought.
It's really sad.
In a discount aisle. It's totally cool, man. Your wife bought it for you.
I'm really embarrassed. We should move on. All right, let's do our taste. We got to do the tasting.
You got that at Kmart on a blue light special.
I won't tell you how much I paid for it because I'm really pissed now.
We know. Yeah. We know how much.
All right. So let's move on. It's going to get a low score. We'll come back to it a little bit later. So, we're talking this week as we're recording this. So today's January 29th. Crazy week in the markets for a lot of people. You had the whole GameStop thing. So Jonathan's like, Sean, you got to get RC on. Like, let's talk about like what's going on. Where's this coming from? And that's where we're going to start and we're going to see where it goes. So RC, like, I know you give a weekly address kind of to your people. Like, what are you saying about, what do you see this week as far as what's going on and kind of how people are, where's this coming from? Like, this is a pretty big, is this a first or is this like,
well, I think it's a first where retail investors have gone face to face with hedge funds and beat them. So, I mean, there's probably about 20 stories in here. And depending on your website or where you're going, I can tell you all the different stories that are running. So one story is Reddit has forums, and one of the forums is called Wall Street Bets. Mm-hmm. And there's some a-holes in there, but there's also some very intelligent people. And they were picking a fight with some hedge funds purposely. And I think this didn't come out of nowhere. This stemmed from 2008 global financial crisis. No bankers did a perp walk. No Wall Street people did a perp walk. Fast forward to 2020, COVID crash. Only the top 10% are protected. The bottom 90% aren't. People aren't going back to work. They're working from home. You can't bet on games. You got Dave Portnoy with Barstool. And so there's a lot of things coming together here. It's not just one thing. The iPhone, the rise of the iPhone, the rise of technology. I mean, the amount of stuff you can do today at home with two screens, you don't need to go work for a hedge fund anymore. If you're a smart guy or gal and you've got 50 grand or 500 grand with some good technical analysis or some research, you absolutely can go head to head with these hedge funds. And hedge funds, no one's feeling bad for them, but GameStop was a company that was shorted 140%. So a short is when you borrow shares from someone else and you hope to buy them back at a lower price. So you borrow them at 10 bucks and you buy them back at a buck and you make 90%. Okay, well, if you're wrong and you borrow them at 10 and it goes to 100, you're wrong 900%. So the losses on shorting are unlimited and the upside is limited to 100% or 99.99%. So there were a lot of hedge funds short GameStop, AMC, BlackBerry, Best, Bed Bath & Beyond, just to name a few. And so this board this subreddit called Wall Street Bets said, let's do this. Now, it's random. It happened to work, right? We only know about the ones that worked, but basically you had a group of retail investors force hedge funds into what's called a short squeeze. So all these individual investors collectively got together and started buying up GameStop, which was a close to a bankrupt company. They were going to go out of business. No one's buying cartridge games anymore. I mean, there's a couple stoned 18-year-olds running it. You know,
I mean, they're the Blockbuster of the video game world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. By the way, Blockbuster popped this week too, and they've been bankrupt for 10 years. But what's fascinating is, like, retail investors collectively now are on par with any quote unquote professional. And COVID accelerated that. COVID said, you don't need to go to Merrill Lynch or Raymond. By the way, Merrill Lynch isn't losing anyone, but you know, people are saying, wait a second, I don't need to just give my money over to the complexity and confusion of big box advisors. And to me, this is fascinating because the regulators allowed 140% short on a company, right? That's the SEC allowing that. They allowed that. And how can that be allowed? Now, and I'm not really taking a stand here. I'm just kind of giving you some of the details here. And so some hedge funds got caught really, really short. There'll probably be a few that go out of business. But then you have to start thinking about the second order and the third order effects, right? So when a hedge fund is down 30, 40%, they sell whatever they can sell. They go sell JD.com or Peloton. Like, when you're on a margin call, if you don't start liquidating, someone will liquidate for you. And so you're having all these other companies getting hit potentially because there's these few companies that are just like, we got to raise money and we got to liquidate. And so to me, it's always been the stock market's always behavior. Like, it's always behavior. Like, coming into 2020, no one's like, okay, what's the interest rate the Fed's going to do? Is it 0.25% by the Fed? And it's going to be 0.5% by the Fed. And all of a sudden it's like you get hit from the side by COVID. Where was that in your fundamental analysis? Like, it's, if this is just exposing the silliness of what I call big box advisors, it's my own term, but we're taught to look at these old, the efficient frontier, like, which was created, I think, in the 50s, and all these ideas. And all of a sudden you have a message board take down some hedge funds, and you have Robinhood not allow their
That's a crazy side story, right? I mean,
and that's when you bring AOC and Ted Cruz and Trump Jr. And it's like, I don't think you can turn off. Like, it feels very illegal to say to your clients, sorry, you can't trade this one symbol.
Yeah. I mean, especially for Robinhood, just because of their name and what their marketing stance is, to say, right, hey, we're kind of for the little guy.
Yeah.
And then when the little guy starts winning, they're like, oh, wait.
I mean, that's the joke. Like, they were never for the little guy. They sold their trade history. I mean,
but that's the marketing.
They clear through Citadel is a hedge fund that does a lot of the clearing. So they get to see all the orders 3 milliseconds before they're placed, which is a lifetime in the world of speech, high frequency trading. And so it was, that's the joke. Like, Robinhood was never for the little guy. The little guy was the product from the very beginning, and three dudes in San Francisco became billionaires on this. So again, there's so much to unpack here, but having Robinhood traders file suit in the Southern District of Manhattan against Robinhood app, Robinhood LLC, and Robinhood Inc., whatever the three entities are, It's going to be interesting, and it'll probably take months to unpack this. But what's not changing is retail investors, Dave Portnoy, who became big in 2020, people, you know, going, wait a second.
Yeah.
And not that YouTube has the answer, because there's so much crap information on there, but people are like, I'm going to go figure this out on my own. And I have to say, I would rather have 20 somethings and early 30 somethings figure out the pain of loss now than at 50. Mm-hmm. And so it's so fascinating, and it's real. People are falling on either side of this. Like it's getting to be a very, even though I said AOC and Ted Cruz are on the same side, there's this very like black, right, mm-hmm. black, white, right, wrong, up, down. They're good. They're bad. And from my point of view, it is absolutely fascinating because people are now going to these message boards and saying, I don't know, I'll put 20 grand in there. I'll do this. And never before have we been able to get persuaded by other people by putting up their account balance saying $22 million. And all of a sudden you look at the dude and you're like, 22 million? And so that's persuading people. Now, those are, you know, the tail end of the tail end of the tail. Like it's the outlier of the outlier of the outlier. But because of social media and because there's 500 million people, we're going to get those 15 dudes, and they're pretty much all dudes, come on and go, yeah, I had a 10,000 8 months ago, and now I have 12 million. Uh-huh. And so it is inspiring people. It's also very dangerous. I don't want people to get hurt, sure. But we've never been in a situation, and COVID has accelerated this. The economy crashing has accelerated this.
How so? When you say that, like, how has COVID accelerated this type of?
So one way it's accelerated it is we were forced to be inside. So we're not going out. And most, by the way, guys, most of this are men. Men have more of addiction to gambling. Women have more of addiction to food and clothes. And I'm not trying to pick a fight with anyone, but men have a more leaning for the addiction of gambling. They do more sports betting. That's not where women hang out. So most of this is a male, and it's a young male thing, 25 to 35 years old.
Yeah.
Those guys are at home. Some of them are unemployed. Some of them are very wealthy, but they're forced to stay home and they're looking at the screens and they're digging around. There's no game to bet on. And they want to connect with other guys. And so they're connecting on the stock market, and they have, even though $4.95 trades never really mattered, if you have $3,500, it does matter emotionally. Sure. So going from a $4.95 trade to a zero, that accelerated everything. And that was brought in by Robinhood. And as soon as they did that, by the way, it wasn't brought in by Robinhood. It started with Charles Schwab back in 1978. And he said, these commissions that the big box advisors in Wall Street is just absolute crap. And he started it. So mm-hmm. It was started back in 78. This is just the accelerant of, you know, zero commission. You're locked at home. You can't bet on the football game. I'm going to go on to Reddit and see what's going on. Yeah. And a lot of these people remember 08. I bet you a lot of them had foreclosures. They did nothing wrong. They were screwed by Countrywide and companies like that. No one did a perp walk in 08 or 09. No one. And that is in the memory of a 35-year-old because that was just 12 years ago. So they're remembering that being in college, their parents getting hurt, their friends getting hurt. And they probably don't remember the dot-com at 35. But a 45 or 55-year-old will.
Sure.
Yeah. And so there's this comeuppance where, you know, it's a there's a democracy happening that the big box don't own it anymore. And you don't need a Bloomberg terminal.
So that's a question I have. Like, so I'm looking at an article and it talks about, you know, it says 16, what's it say? Let's say 9 investors made $16 billion on GameStop squeeze. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, at least 8 of the 9 are advisors or management or groups, you know, FMR, BlackRock, Ryan Cohen, who is a big
CEO. This was not 18 guys in the basement of their parents' house. Like, you can't take $4 stock to $500 without some major money coming in.
So my question is, like, it seems like you got this renegade group of people in their basement, like, you know, shoving it to the man. But like, I mean, you're talking about Wall Street has some of the smartest, most resourced.
Oh, there's hedge funds in on this. I mean, Wall Street Bets did not do this on their own.
My question is, do you think you can actually beat the Wall Street? I mean, they may get burned once, but they're not going to get burned twice, are they?
Who are
they? Do you think Wall Street? So the hedge fund managers.
You know, there's 2,000 hedge funds.
Yeah. So like, but like, is the little guy really gonna be able to consistently beat this, or is it this a one-off event and we're not going to see this again? Like, do you think the little guy has enough power now? Do you think we're in that world?
Here's what's
interesting. Do you think the world's flat enough? You
know, the little guy beat the big guy since the COVID bottom. So this didn't just happen in the third week of January 21.
Okay.
Like,
tell me more.
You heard all the kind of these old white guys who are between 50 and 80. They were poo-pooing the 2020, 75% run in the S&P. And you had all these 25 to 35-year-old people being like, nah, I'm in. Like, they were right. They won. And all these older people fighting the last war, studying for the wrong test, saying, well, the P.E. ratio. It's like, no one cares about a P.E. ratio. The 80s are over, bro.
Yeah.
And because do you think the P.E. ratio matters to GameStop or AMC or Tesla? I mean, this is the fascinating thing about investing, that if you really understand it, it's all behavior. And it's always been all behavior. And this is a great example. It's all behavior. And the more people figure that out early on, the better they're going to do.
So what do you mean when you say that it's all behavior? Like, can you flesh that out a little bit for the listeners?
So if you're taught that the only reason you should buy a stock is if it has a moat and a good enterprise value and a good capital on return or return on equity or price to earnings ratio, by the way, these are all very 90s ideas, right? If you're taught that, you're getting hurt badly in the market. Mm-hmm. You're buying crap stocks. You're not seeing what others are seeing. Right. And so what you're left with is, this doesn't make sense, right? Because if you're taught to study for the wrong test, Trump gets elected in 16, and in 2017 was the most calm, most stable stock market, I think possibly in history. I think the Dow Jones went up something like 40% in 2017. And so if you're not focused on behavior, behavior is price, right? Price, the price of an index or the price of a stock is, it's everything, right? The price is a collection of the behavior behind that in whether it's GameStop or the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones, when that black line goes up and to the right, that's telling you the behavior of the 50 million people behind that symbol.
And yeah, so you've said before, you know, in our conversations, you're like, it doesn't matter if GameStop is worth $400 or $500, whatever it's up to now. Like, you can argue that all day long. The fact is, there's X number of people driving the price up, and that's where it's going.
GameStop and Ethereum.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be a jerk here. Like, yeah. Ethereum is worth what people think it's worth. Same as the US dollar or the euro. The US dollar was invented in 1971. The euro was invented in 1999. Bitcoin was invented in 2010. If you're detached, it's all the same. Like, what is the dollar worth? What people are willing to pay for the dollar? Like, this has been the way it's been for thousands of years.
But my question is, did people really find value in it, or was this a coordinated effort to really, because it seems like what we're saying, I mean, GameStop is kind of on their way out in terms of, you know, technology. Well,
GameStop, the company was definitely it's a specialty retailer that was dying and it still is dying. Mm-hmm. That just happened to be the vehicle of this subreddit forum to attempt. I mean, what we don't know is, was this their 700th attempt? And we didn't hear of the other 699. Sure. Finally, this one went. I mean, we don't get to hear about the 10,000 people that failed in Silicon Valley. We just get to hear about the billionaires who we you know, kneel down to and think they're idols. To me, it's all about behavior. Mm-hmm. And whether it's like you use the word value, I never use that word. To me, value has no place in growing money. To me, it's like, look, I mean, look, GameStop went from, you know, 4 to 500. So we can't talk about, you know, it's not even a hockey stick. Like it was like bending over.
Yeah. But at the same time, like I could make an argument just, you know, there's a value in GameStop because it was a tool that people could use to make a point, right?
And it's not dead yet. Yeah. I mean, before we came on, it was up 70% today.
Yeah.
It's worth what people are willing to pay for it, just like crypto, just like the dollar, just like Microsoft, just like Tesla, just like Google, just like Amazon. It's been consolidated and super focused in. But
And what I'm saying is like value is not just what the company profits, what the company can produce in profits. Value may be opportunity. Value may be, you know,
it was very valuable to the people who made tens of millions of dollars in it. Like value is in the eye of the beholder.
Exactly. Right. So like here's a valuable asset that's undervalued or not undervalued, but just like it's an opportunity and the opportunity is the value. Like the company, who cares, right? Could have been anybody. It's not GameStop.
It could have been
GameStop because, you know, I've looked at some YouTube videos this week where people back from last year are saying, you know, investors are talking about GameStop and they're saying, and they're showing the, you know, the earnings reports and the reasons why this company is solid to invest in. And this was back when it was $4 and something a share back in 2020. And they're saying, you need to jump on board this. I mean, the company is restructured and they're justifying the reason. But then
it goes back to the little guy, right? And if you can stir up enough ideology around anything, mm-hmm. Our last episode, Jonathan, we were talking about, you know, QAnon and like that whole thing. Sure. And like, if you can stir up enough stir up enough ideas around something, then that something becomes very valuable. Regardless of what it is. Like if I decide I want to make chocolate chip cookies, the most important thing on planet Earth, which is not going to take much because they're close already. Like we could do that. Like if you had enough people, if you got the masses together. And I think that's kind of where we're at in the world is like crowds can, I think it's always been that, but it's really catapulted RC. Like you talked about. And like you said, you think it started back in 95 with Netscape, like this ability for the crowds to take more control.
I mean,
and shift.
Yeah. 2007, we got the iPhone. Mm-hmm. Robinhood does not happen without the iPhone.
Right.
Before the iPhone, I don't know how many millions of miles of fiber was laid across this planet. Mm-hmm. And most of those companies went bankrupt. And that got us high speed internet, right? It's been happening for a while. I mean, if you can go online, you don't need to hire companies anymore. You never did, but people thought you did. And so it's a flashpoint. Like it has nothing to do with GameStop. I mean, it's a fascinating story.
Exactly.
Being 140% short of something seems illegal, but apparently the SEC allows it.
Who's going to buy GameStop, right? So like it was a safe bet because like who's ever going to buy that?
Well, yeah. And then other hedge funds do what other hedge funds do. Like that's the silly thing about hedge funds. If you look at all, and I don't know how many there are, but if you look at the 2000 hedge funds, regardless of their names, long, short, high beta, low, you know, low alpha, whatever. But if you look, and then if you look at all of the returns for the year, they're within like 9 basis points of each other, regardless of the names on their website. Like they're all doing the same thing. They're all eating each other's lunches. Mm-hmm. And the markets have been getting manipulated from the beginning. The Fed's been manipulating the market since 1913. And like new people come in, like they're manipulating. It's like, yeah, they're about 105 years into that one.
Right.
And I'm not defending them. It's just like people don't have they glom onto these narratives that don't matter. And then they end up in these rabbit holes with other people thinking the Fed is evil. It's like, okay, how'd you do this year though? How'd your money grow? Like, so you're right. It, like, GameStop is valuable to the ones who made money on it. And it's also maybe, I'm using the value word, is maybe also valuable to the Reddit people saying, we got you once. Mm-hmm. I want to see some perp walks, because nine guys on a subreddit did not take GameStop from $4 to 478 or whatever it peaked out at. And it's the game, the story's not over yet. Like I said, as of this recording, it was up 70-ish% today.
Yeah, and the question is, like, what does GameStop do with all that cash?
Well, they don't do anything with it. This is all other people trading it. Teacher in Kansas, and
but don't they get doesn't GameStop benefit somehow?
Not really. I mean, maybe in corporate, if those people have shares, they're selling them if they can.
Yeah. They're like, man, this is fantastic.
I mean, the 22-year-olds working there, they're not
cash out and be on their way.
Okay. So what are some GameStops? I mean, they've been getting all the news. What are some, are there some other examples of similar companies like GameStop that, cause I see BlackBerry. I haven't like heard about BlackBerry in like probably 10 years. And then all of a sudden they're on the radar this week. But
here's what's interesting. Like, something that won't change is now Wall Street, I can guarantee you right now, in 1,000 hedge funds, someone's telling the 19-year-old that they hired who graduated MIT at 16, you're on Reddit every day.
That's exactly what I told my wife this morning.
You get on Reddit. I want you on Twitter. I want to see the current. Sure. Let's go. Yeah. I mean, they're going to find the ways. And then that arbitrages it away.
Yes.
It just that.
That was kind of my question before. Like, can they pull this off twice? Because these companies, these hedge funds have so much resource and so much.
Exactly. And hedge funds will recalibrate and go, okay, that $12.5 billion hedge fund went out of business in 30 days because they were 30% of their portfolio was short one $1 billion crappy specialty retailer. So that was
because we weren't paying attention to this. So now we've got a full-time guy over here.
They didn't manage their portfolio. This is portfolio management 101. This is what happens when a third of your money is in one short. You can go out of business.
So I guess my question is, like, we've got this, you know, the world is flat kind of idea that's been around for a while now with the internet. Can the little guy actually influence, you know, the bigger movers in the world? Or are we just delusional thinking, you know, or that's my question. Like,
things have changed and they are changing. And like I said, they've been changing since 1978. Mm-hmm. It's been happening. Again, it's a flashpoint. This is like a battle, but not the war. The war is going on.
For our listeners, what was 1978?
So there's only been two disruptions in investing in 45 years. One was John Bogle, who invented he didn't invent the index fund. Wells Fargo did for their insurance clients, but he popularized it.
Okay.
And when John Bogle popularized it in the late 70s, he was lauded and shamed by the entire industry. You fool. The other guy was Charles Schwab, who said, why are retail investors paying these stupid commissions? Mm-hmm. So fast forward today, and it's still those two disruptions. I mean, we have iPhones and we have zero commission, but that was happening way before today. It just culminated right now in zero commission. And there's some index funds that are zero fee. So
which, if you really think about it, should be a red flag, right? Like, nobody's doing anything for free. Like,
I don't buy free. I mean, free is pretty expensive. but I mean, I heard someone, I'm not going to say his name, but I heard him talk today, and he's a very rich person. He's like, I didn't know that Robinhood was selling their deal flow to a hedge fund. Okay, but how does it work if everything's free? Like, somewhere there's got to be money being made.
Somebody's making money, right? Yeah.
Someone's making money. And, you know, the new guys who founded it, or the founders and the hedge and the VC, they're going to make the money on Robinhood. But it'll be interesting to see what happens because